Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you, and get you in the right mindset so that you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. My name is Kong Chong, and I am the host of this show. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you to act, and get you in the right mindset so you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. I'm very excited about today's guest. His name is Stu Hynek. Stu started his career combining marketing with a one-in-a-million mentorship with top cartoonists from Playboy and The New Yorker, resulting in a new genre of direct mail and hundreds of record-breaking campaigns for some of the world's biggest direct marketers. A twice nominated Hall of Fame marketer, best-selling business author, and Wall Street Journal cartoonist, Stu's first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, was named one of top 64 sales book of all time. Stu, thank you so much for dedicating a part of your time today to join me on my show. How are you doing?
Oh, my pleasure, Kong. Great to join you.
Awesome. And I'm, like I said, really excited to have you join me on this call because you come from such a unique background. And quite frankly, I haven't had a cartoonist on my show. And so I wanted to invite a more diverse, broad perspectives on this show to talk about purpose and meaning. But let's dive in a little bit on your background. How did you get started in this work of cartoon, and share us more about your background? I know you do more than
sure.
Just drawing, right?
Well, so I'm going to make a reference, and I don't know if your audience may not be old enough to perhaps catch the reference, but my career started when I was a kid. I don't know, 10 or so, and my brothers and I were sneaking Playboys out of my father's dresser drawers. That's it. That's where it started. And so the reference that people used to say, I read Playboy, but I'm reading the articles, or I read it for the articles. So I always joke that we read the articles, but we were looking at the pictures and also looking at the cartoons. And I was just amazed at these cartoons. There were two cartoonists in particular who always had full color, full page cartoons in the magazine. So one was Gahan Wilson and the other was Eldon Dedini. And they were incredible. The cartoons were incredible, but also just, you know, I'm just wondering, how do they do this? I mean, the whole picture is alive. There's something really magical happening in a cartoon because you're just looking at a simple picture and then a few quick lines of copy, but you have now been given this insight. And I didn't see it that way as a kid, but that is what it is. I mean, when we laugh at something, think about the nature of humor. It's about truth revealed in a twist. It's about, you know, it's just, think about it. When you find something funny, don't we often find ourselves saying, oh my God, that's so true? Because that's what it's about. When you go and watch a comedy show and the comedians up there, if they're hot, they're really on, they're getting people laughing because they're seeing those same things in their lives happening. And they're laughing because it's so frustrating and they don't have anybody to tell it to, or they haven't expressed it as in a way that the comedian has. But that's what's happening, is that we're sharing insight and truth with the audience, but we're doing it in a twist. It surprises you and it causes that gut reaction of laughter.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing. So tell us a little bit more about your childhood experience. Like what were you like as a child? What inspired you to do the work you're doing today?
Going back to Playboy again, the cartoons were just amazing. I just, how do you do that? And I wanted to learn how to do it. And I was pretty good at art just naturally and kept going. But as a kid, I was probably just very shy and then incredibly mischievous and curious. So, and adventurous too. So I always was looking for, where's the next thing to do? Let's explore further. And and how can you make this work or that work? And it just translated into this natural curiosity that carried over into my actual career. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that really is where my books come from as well. It's just, you know, one of my, let's say the first published or traditionally published book was How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And so there was, I had experienced something. I was using cartoons to break through to people, and I was getting through, and it was like having a secret weapon, and I was having a blast with this. I mean, it's like you could point this thing at anyone and get a meeting or connect with them, which was pretty amazing. But I got really curious about what everyone else was doing, because we all face that same challenge. If you can't get meetings, nothing happens in life if you can't connect with people. I mean, that it all comes from connecting with each other. So if you can't get a meeting, there's no business, there's nothing, you can't do anything. But if you can get a meeting with anyone, that's like having a superpower. And so then I got curious about, well, what's everyone else doing? How are they doing it? And found that the people are doing the most incredible things out there, to just incredibly clever things to get meetings with people. And that informed and inspired that first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. So it's that, I guess it's still that childish or childlike curiosity and mischief and adventurism all rolled into one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's...
I don't know if it does or not. I don't know if my career makes sense at all, actually, because it's a crazy one.
Yeah, so often the folks that are on my show, there's a point in time that they had shared a profound experience that kind of led them to where they are today. And so I was looking for an example of that. What was a profound moment for you that kind of changed the trajectory of your career that propelled you forward to doing what you do today? Because so often a lot of people, what they think about meaning and as it ties to work, it's often not a positive thing, right? I don't know what the specific statistics is, but a large chunk of Americans are unhappy with work. And so I was hoping that maybe perhaps you could share with us, you know, what ignited your passion, your inspiration?
Well, I mean, there you should have these revelations happening throughout your life, I think, and certainly throughout your career. But one of the first ones was my first job out of college was as a marketing manager for a steel company. And I inherited this direct mail campaign. It was a weekly campaign. It's these mailers that would go out. And I was also a cartoonist at that point. I was already a published cartoonist. And I thought, we're going to mix the two. Let's give it a try. Let's see what people, see how people react to it. And I started getting great reactions to it. And then that's one revelation, actually, is that, oh my gosh, these cartoons, they're really useful. And I started getting more information about cartoons, just the nature of cartoons, because I was a member of the Cartoonist Guild. And they at one point, they sent this article from Folio Magazine, which is the magazine for people who produce magazines. And the article said that you should really consider putting cartoons into your publications, because readership surveys are showing that they're the best read and remembered parts of any magazine or newspaper they're in. So I thought, well, okay, then that must work in direct mail as well. Tried it. It worked. It was great. The next revelation came when I was laid off. I thought, well, shoot, what am I going to do? And I went directly to their competitor, and I said, "Look, do you know those mailings that Crest Steel has been putting out? Well, I'm the guy who's behind that, and I want to do that for you. I'm no longer working with Crest, but I want to do that for you." And the thing was, I was taking interviews for jobs, but so I had a resume, but I also had cards made up that made me the president of my company. And that was the identity, that was the whole framework that I loved working with, instead of, here's my resume, give me an interview. But just walking in, I'm the president of my own company, and walking into my former employer's nearest competitor. It was the first meeting I had, and the guy said, yes. And what will you charge? And I charged twice what my salary was. It's like, you know, there's another one. You don't really, it seems like salaries, I don't know. Seems like salaries are, well, think about it, the nature of business. they have to make money on whatever, they have to mark up whatever they, and make a profit on whatever they're doing and whatever they're spending on. So we're investing in, and they're investing in you as a, as an employee. So right. If you're out on your own and you're charging just directly for your services, assuming that they're interesting services that have unfair advantages tied to them, well, then you could charge a lot more than you would as a salary. So that was a big one. That revelation was incredible. And then, and so now I'm creating direct mail for these industrial clients, and that wasn't terribly satisfying. I really wanted to work with the big magazine publishers, and I knew that they were big users of direct mail and direct response. So I reached out, I got my first two assignments from magazines, one from Rolling Stone and the other one from Bon Appetit. And this was to test or create new test direct mail campaigns against that would go up against their controls, which are the most effective thing they'd put in the mail. And those first two tests beat the, I don't know what kind of language I should be using here, but they beat the hell out of their controls. I set new records for response with the first two campaigns for magazine clients with these cartoons on them. So, well, okay, then here's my chance to reach out into the rest of the publishing industry. And what that meant was I needed to reach about 24 people. That was it. Just VPs of circulation at these big Manhattan-based print media companies like Time Inc. and Condé Nast and the Wall Street Journal, et cetera. And so I reached out with this little campaign. Didn't know what to call it. I called it a contact campaign, but this little 8x10 print of a cartoon, each one personalized. So each one was about the recipient. And that was the version of cartooning that I was selling in these direct mail campaigns. You would get a piece of mail and it would have a cartoon on it about you. So that went with a note and it said, this is the device I just used to beat the controls for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit. And I think we should put this to the test for your titles. And that was one of the most incredible revelatory experiences I've had in throughout my life, really. That one was amazing because what I discovered was when I sent that campaign out, all of them responded. That's 100% response rate. All of them agreed to meet. That's 100% meeting rate. All of them became clients at 100% conversion rate. And that launched my business. It all came from a campaign to 24 people that I spent about $100 on. And it launched my business. It was worth millions of dollars.
So incredible. Let's pause there for a second.
What's the message from all that? Just, you've got to keep trying these ideas. Don't be afraid to fail. Keep trying these things.
Yeah, I love that. Let's talk about failure in a bit here. But prior to, so you mentioned one of your revelation was, assigning the title president of your business and coming up with a quote that was twice your salary. How did you acquire that mindset to say, look, I'm going to assign myself a title and I'm going to make myself the president of my business, and this is how much I'm going to cost? Like a lot of people, when they're starting their business, there's so much to figure out. Sometimes people just don't know where to start. So did you acquire any knowledge from reading books, or did you have a mentor that taught you how to sell, how to create a business, all that? Or was it just trial and error for you?
I had some experience. I'd already run a business before in college, and had developed some interesting negotiating techniques. It was a band, and we developed these really interesting negotiating techniques, and discovered a lot about human nature and psychology and business. And so, when someone would call and hire us, I'd say, okay, I'm on your side. This is great, but I have to bring it to the other members of the group. So we got to make the offer good. So it was always, if I bring it to my partners, and I'm on your side, let's pitch this, but I got to make it a good pitch. Let's make it a good pitch. And so, I think what I realized is that, it's just, you just have to ask. I mean, just play, be playful. I think that's probably one of the messages here, is that it really pays to be playful in business. And You know, we could go in so many directions on this question because I have that other book, my most recent book, How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed. And so I'm doing everything based on the mindset of a weed right now. Now, I'm not talking about like a bunch of, not this, weed mindset, not a bunch of guys smoking some dubs, not that. It's when you look at what weeds do, they don't ask for permission. They don't show up. They're not waiting for an invitation. They are urgent and aggressive and resilient and incredibly, I don't know what the word is, powerful, I suppose, and how they approach anything, any turf that they want to take over. They're very forceful about it. They don't ask you if it's okay. They just do it. They'll find out if it's okay. And if you cut them down, they'll keep coming back. I mean, they're that, take on that weed mindset, and I think you've got 90% of it licked. So that's one. And you know, I often talk about when I'm talking about unfair advantages, which is part of the weed strategy model from that book, but we all have to have unfair advantages. And that's true if you're in business, but it's also true just personally and in your career, start developing unfair advantages. Good God, I'm one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists. That's a great unfair advantage because right. It's really hard to match it, right? Yeah. So when I do things with cartoons, I put on that suit, that jumpsuit of, I'm one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists. So people are going, really? I've never even met one of those any cartoonists, really. But you're in the Wall Street Journal, really? And so you've got to have these unfair advantages. And you've also got to have this mindset of just, you're just going to make things work. And I think one of the best examples I can think of is Elon Musk and his development process of the Falcon booster system, and then what's happening with Starship. So Falcon booster system, we've all lived through that story of they were trying to land their boosters propulsively back on the ground so they could reuse them. Nobody had done it though. It was a crazy idea. And they would shoot them up and they'd explode, and they'd shoot them and they'd come down and they'd explode. But eventually they'd start sticking their landings. And then eventually it was like routine that they would stick their landings. And now they have a booster system. It's not just now, they've had it for years now, this booster system that can launch payloads into space, come back and land propulsively. And then they recycle the whole ship. And they have some of those ships now, I don't know if they're like on their 10th trips up into orbit. So it totally changed the cost structure of putting something into space or into orbit. And that's a totally unfair advantage, right? Because no one else can match it. None of the state space agencies can match it. You might argue that Blue Origin can match it, and they've somewhat matched. They've not putting anything into orbit. They're not really a factor yet. So far, SpaceX has enjoyed this incredibly unfair advantage. That is unfair from the standpoint of their competitors. And you need but then also I just want to say one more thing about his mindset. Look at what he was doing. He was trying to do something no one else had done before. And so it was a try, fail, and then try and succeed process. So failure is good. It's as long as you're learning from it, failure is incredibly useful. Don't ever think that if you fail, well, that defines you. It just defines an issue that you can solve now because you just learned from it. I mean, it's an incredible thing to give yourself the space to fail, as long as what you're really trying to do is learn. Does this work or does that work? You know, if we shoot this up, what happens? And then what failed on it so that we can change that? I think that's it. I think that's the mindset is to be okay with failing sometimes. It's okay. It's part of learning. If you're not failing, it's just like if you're skiing and you don't fall, you're not learning, you're not progressing. So take some falls every once in a while, learn from them, and just follow your passions, I guess. I don't know, that sounds really hackneyed, but just follow what it is that you really love to do and go after it and develop those unfair advantages. And so don't be afraid to fail because you're going to learn.
How did you climb up to work for, Wall Street Journal? Like, I know you talk about unfair advantage, but I'm assuming it probably took a lot of work, hard work and passion and sleepless nights. Could you share with us what was your
thoughts? Yeah. I think it's Malcolm Gladwell that said, you've got to put in 10,000 hours to become an expert at anything. And that wasn't, I don't know how many hours I put into it, but I put a lot of hours into cartooning. And you know, I should describe that, you know, when I put that agency together, remember when I was saying that I was sending those contact devices out to the publishers and I was getting all of them as clients. Well, one of the things I did really quickly was I recruited a lot of my heroes of cartooning. So those same cartoonists that I, Gahan Wilson and Eldon Dedini, for example, from Playboy, those guys became part of my agency. Isn't that amazing? And then pulled in some others from the New Yorker. And I ended up being, you know, so I was the creative director on these campaigns. I was directing everything, but and I would give every time I sold a new campaign, I'd say to the client, okay, so look, here are all the cartoonists that I have in my group. Who would you want on the group? Who should do the cartoon for the campaign? And they'd choose which cartoonist they wanted. And so what that ended up doing, because of all that, I was doing all that work, I was making money for them, but because I was doing all that work with them and directing them, but also learning exactly what they're doing, what their thought process was as they were creating the cartoons, how they created expression from hands and everything, all that stuff. I went through this incredible one in a million mentor program, essentially, that we didn't know existed. No one knew it was happening. But I ended up being mentored by the greatest cartoonists in the world. So that was a big part of perfecting it, is understanding exactly what the greatest cartoonists in the world were doing, what their process was, how they thought about it. And you know, what were some of the approaches to humor that were just kind of old and worn and, you know, didn't really, they weren't the pinnacle of it. So that plus a lot of, well, you know, I was using, I guess you could call it practice, but I was using cartoons, doing a lot of cartooning myself in these campaigns. And so that, you know, eventually it led to, well, I'm kind of a prominent cartoonist, and it made sense that I should reach out to the syndicate that feeds the cartoons to the Wall Street Journal. And it was pretty easy to get in at that point. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. So of course, in order to work for some of the best people in their field, there has to be some sort of relationship building. Did you have any relationships with this person that is labeled as the most talented cartoonist in the world? What was that process like for you? Did you?
Well, again, that kind of goes back to getting meetings that change your life. And so I connected with Leo Cullum. So he was one of the cartoonists from the New Yorker, and he lived. I lived in LA, and he lived in Malibu. So we connected, and that was great. And I got introductions from him, especially among the New Yorker cartoonists. I'm trying to remember. That must have been the connection tree for reaching Gahan Wilson and Eldon Dedini as well. So those were the two Playboy cartoonists. I mean, they were, Eldon and Gahan were just incredibly popular at the time. So it was, and especially Eldon, he was just, his stuff was so, so crazy. I mean, it was so ghoulish and macabre, and it looked insane. Actually, it looked like he was insane. And so he was just absolutely just incredibly famous as a cartoonist back then. So it wasn't really easy to get a hold of him. It wouldn't have been, I should say, easy to get a hold of him otherwise. But you make connections, and once you make connections, you work those connections. It's kind of like LinkedIn before right. LinkedIn existed. But you certainly, I say work those connections. That sounds like you're taking something. You're just asking, would you introduce me to, I mean, like, you know, here's one thing. I ended up getting introduced to the cartoon editor at the New Yorker at the time. So at the time that was Lee Lorenz, and Lee knew everyone because he was working with all of them. So Lee would introduce me to all sorts of cartoonists from that point, but it took making that first connection, and not just making the connection, but you have to be someone that they want to refer to the people that these are the most important people they know. I mean, like Leo introducing me to his editor at the New Yorker was a big deal. And I needed to make sure that I would be a great person for him to refer to Lee, and that I would bring new benefits, maybe new unfair advantages to Lee. And so it all, it's interesting how it all flows together, because you need to get meetings with people, and you need to have that whole weed strategy under your belt as well, so that you've got unfair advantages that people are saying, well, that's compelling. That's really interesting. Yeah, let's meet. Let's talk.
Right. Yeah, that's incredible. So what's your relationship with NASDAQ?
NASDAQ. Well, I've been a speaker for, well, NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center. I don't have one with NASDAQ itself, but with the Entrepreneurial Center, I've been a speaker for them a few times. And through that, I came to know their executive director. I guess you could see that I get to know people. I mean, once I know someone, then I get to know more of the people there. And so I got to know the executive director. And then I was really, really blessed, really fortunate that she, when I reached out to ask if she would write the foreword to How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, I'm sorry, How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed, that she said, sure. I got off that call just like screaming, going, oh my God, I can't believe it. The executive director of the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center will be writing the foreword to this book. That's a great, great thing. So and then when the book came out, well, one of the things I mentioned in the book was that I was going to start a new award called the Total, it'll be an annual award called the Total Weed Award. And we were going to go around calling people total weeds and they were going to be really thankful for it. Oh my God, thank you, Stu. You know, but we were going to launch this award. And I thought, you know, well, one of the things when I'm applying weed strategy to anything, weeds are natural collaborators. They get their power from their scale, not necessarily, well, they get it from others. They get it from their unfair advantages, but it's really doing all of that at scale. So weeds really would encourage us to collaborate with the smartest people we know as fast as we can. And that certainly held true here. So when I, after the book came out, I reached out to Nicola again and I said, you know, that is the executive director. I said, you know, I have this Total Weed Award thing that I've mentioned in the book. I need to launch it. And I want to know, could we collaborate on this? Could the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center become the home of the Total Weed Award? She said, yeah. Oh my gosh, fantastic. That, I'm so excited. And we'll be selling sponsorship against it. And there will be a media partner in it. And it's still evolving, that relationship.
It's just so beautiful just listening to your success stories. Obviously, it takes a strong mindset to cultivate these relationships and keep going when the journey gets tough and you're going up against many, many failures. How do people overcome failures?
Use Elon Musk as your model. Elon, I mean, he's doing it now with Starship, and he's been put on hold for the past year or so, but I think there will be a launch coming in April, which will be the first orbital attempt. Now, he's shot that Starship up to, I think, 14,000 kilometers in height and then, or in altitude, and then it's flipped over on its side and it has those four fins that move around and sort of it falls through the atmosphere like a skydiver does, essentially. And then at the very end, I don't know how high up it is, but suddenly one or two of the engines fire up and it flips out and it lands vertically. Nobody's done that either. Well, although he's done it now. So, and you know, they come down and they explode, they come down and they crash, they come down and they land and then explode. All these things, it doesn't matter. Every time you just have to watch what he does. His process is about learning from, I don't even know if I could call these failures. It's like we need to learn. Right. Oh, this is a good one. I mean, weeds deal with what is. That's one of their primary traits. They just deal with what is, right? There's no emotions clouding them. They're not saying, well, I thought I was entitled to this or that, or that's not fair or whatever. It's just, they just do it. They just deal with what is. And that's what Elon is doing. But he's saying, I need to know what is. I mean, what things are reality? How does it work? Or how does it need to work to actually succeed? And so those failures are not, they don't define him at all, right? I mean, that you don't think of him as a failure. I don't think anyone does. But I watch him and I just think the guy's unbelievable. Because and look at the mindset on him, because he knows he's going to fail. He knows he's going to blow up a lot of like hundreds of millions of dollars worth of prototypes. But it's all to get to a place where he can do something that no one else can do, where he has something that no one else can duplicate, and that's where he's headed. So I think if you're ever saying I'm a failure, you know, I failed at my last job, whatever it is, just learn from it and think of Elon. You just learn, just apply what you just learned and you will succeed wildly.
Yeah, I think there are two types of people on this planet. The first is one that has a fixed mindset, and the second is one that has a growth mindset. The person has a fixed mindset, when they come across failure, they label themselves as a failure, right? Instead of seeing it as it's just a temporary defeat, and you know, we can grow and learn from it. And then the growth mindset individual, like yourself and what you've been referencing throughout this talk, is just look at it as is, and just learn from it and just keep going. And so I think for folks that are listening to the show, what I want them to get is that failure is not defeat. As long as you're still breathing and you're still you know, your mind is still operating, there's always possibilities to pick yourself back up and win. Doesn't matter how tough the situation is.
Failure is incredibly useful, and as long as you're not ignoring it, don't ignore it, because there are lessons that you'll just keep learning over and over again. Yeah. But learn from it, and I mean, because I think you just always go through life learning and curious and hungry for the next adventure and the next milestone. Like, what else can I pull off? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I go. It's just that when you do pull off something that's impossible, it's what a blast that is. It's incredible. And I think similarly, as you're working in your career, I always had the sense that, okay, I was creating all these campaigns. They're cool looking campaigns, you know, I think so, but the cartoons and so on, they look cool and they look mischievous and unusual. Like, they're compelling. You've got to dig in. It's, what are these?
Yeah.
But, the thing that I figured out early on was that the reason why I was getting the fees that I was getting, and I was getting paid a lot of money to create these campaigns, is because all of growth and just how to make a business work.
Right.
So I'm sorry, you froze a little bit. I didn't hear you.
Apologize for that, for the connectivity issue here. Could you give us an example? Do you have like a example of your work that you could illustrate or show us on video?
Oh, you mean like what the cartoons look like, or
sure, like just a piece of your work, so that
sure. Well, first, I'm gonna grab something behind me. So
So
this is what I call a big board, and so it's an 18 by 24 inch, quarter inch thick foam core board, and there's a cartoon and you won't be able to read it, but there's a cartoon on there that has a caption that gets personalized. So it's always about the recipient. So for example, I send this one to Mark Cuban, and if I fill in his name and so on, the one that I sent to him, she's telling her friend, Mark Cuban says you can tell a lot about a person just by looking at their Mavs tickets. I tend to agree. And so of course he's the owner of the Mavericks. So he got it and it's up on his wall. Now that was my, you know, that was my introduction. That was my piece to go out there and say, hey, Mark, I think we should connect. You know, or would you, you know, I want to do this. Would that be of interest? You know, that kind of thing. But I need to get his attention. And certainly the thing I did to get his attention ended up, I think it's framed, but anyway, it's up on his wall in his office.
That's incredible. And I think there's some humor in that process. How do you develop humor and sarcasm in your—
Oh, good God. I mean, you either have a sense of humor or you don't. I don't know if I don't think I could advise that. I mean, if you're mischievous and I don't know, if laughter comes to you pretty easily, then there it is.
Right, right.
Right. I mean, it's almost like asking, I don't know, how to develop a sense of balance or eyesight or something. Either you have it or you don't, I think. But but certainly you can use it, and it's a lot of fun. Humor's a really tricky thing to work with. I found that when we're joking with friends, let's say we're having a beer or a coffee together and we're joking and they're good friends, the jokes are usually at your friend's expense. It's usually a put down. It's a put down meant with love, but it's a put down. And if you start putting that into your ad campaigns, a put down of the recipient, you're not going to, it won't, well, it's not going to work. That'll be one of those failures you'll learn from. So,
right. Yeah.
But it's really tough to come up with those. And I could show you another example. I have this video that I love to share. It shows, sure. Here's the thing. The setup is, you probably know Billie Jean, the marketing guru on Instagram. And I wanted to just reach out to him and say hi and just introduce myself. And so I sent this strip cartoon, a multi-panel strip cartoon. And it's about, pardon me, it's about him. And his assistant got it. Actually, here, let me just. Now I can talk. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen, and I know my drive will take a moment to spool up. So while it's doing that, I'll explain.
Sure.
That. So I sent this to. I think you can see that now, right?
I can see that. Yes.
Yeah. So I sent this to Billie Jean, and his assistant got it, and she said, "This looks interesting. I think I'm gonna just do an unboxing video for Bill." And so here it comes.
I usually wait till you get here, Bill, to show your packages, but this one's pretty cool and I'm too anxious to wait and show you. So here's the reveal. If I can get the cap off. Read how awesome this is. The Tale of the Hired Gun. I ever tell you fellas the story of the Billy Kid? Yep, sure did. How about Wild Bill Jean? You mean the marketing whiz from San Diego? At least 100 times before. Yep, you can say that again. Look at the back. I'm kind of in love with this guy. Mad respect.
Now, you know, first of all, I love calling Billy Wild Billy Jean in the cartoon. I mean... I don't know where it is. I don't know if it's up on his wall or where that ended up, but just calling anyone wild. I mean, if I sent one to you, it would be Wild Kong Jing.
Oh man. No, even if it's just a little card, you can make something up. I love that.
So you can see it's just fun to use these cartoons. They're a lot of fun, but no, I was calling. So here's the thing.
Sure.
There's no put down there. The cowboys, they're sitting around the campfire, and one of them say, "Ever tell you fellas the story of Billy the Kid?" Yep, sure did. How about Wild Kong Jing?
And, there you go.
And then the next one they're saying, you mean the host of the podcast, whatever they're going to say, but at least 100 times before. So they've been talking about you. He's told your story many times. That's what they're telling him. So so you come out on top in the humor. That's the thing.
Right.
The one that I just showed you. The one with the two women having coffee, and one of them saying, "Look, Mark Cuban says you can tell a lot about a person just by looking at their Mavs tickets." I tend to agree. That's saying something great about Mavericks tickets, And it's funny, but it's also really saying something very positive. That's the thing that's really subtle about this, is that I'm not putting anyone down in these cartoons. They're loving getting these cartoons, and when I was creating direct mail. For the publishers, all that when I first started out, they used to put out these things in the mail. They was called junk mail for a good reason, actually. And so you'd get all these things that were manipulative. So it was either teaser copy, open quickly because there's an elephant inside, or something like, "Well, how can that be?" Or you'd see what looked like a check showing through a window in the outer envelope, and you'd go, "Oh my God, I got a check. It has my name on it." And you open it up, it's a voucher they want you to order a magazine or whatever it is. They want to sell you something. So all those things, people got really frustrated with those. But when they got my mailings and the cartoons, learned really quickly. So we went through failures too, but learned really quickly what it is that works. And we get people, they'd clip the cartoon out of the mailing and stick it up on the refrigerator door. And if we offered an 8x10 print of the cartoon, with their paid order, we were setting records of cash with order on those subscriptions. So it was doing it in a different way, and it was causing people to, they just had a lot of fun with it. And you can see that it when it's done properly, it's a really powerful thing.
Right. Yeah, it is powerful. And I remember, being in high school, just reading through these cartoons and just having a lot of joy just reading through them, because there's just so lighthearted and there's a
Yeah.
little bit of sarcasm in there. And in life, there's just so much going on that each individual has to deal with. But when they see something like your work, it's just refreshing to look at life a different way. And I think that's
It
where.
is, and I can tell you it's a total unfair advantage for me because I can just, if I pop a cartoon into LinkedIn or any social media, it gets a lot of attention. Why wouldn't it? But I mean, it gets a lot of it. It has to be funny, it has to be a good cartoon, but then it gets a lot of attention and you're the guy who put it out. That's an unfair advantage, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And
Yeah,
a lot of it
that's
has to
another one.
do with, of course, not just, your passion and ambition, but also creativity. I think initially when you and I talked about entrepreneurship, what does that mean? And we talked about the topic of creativity and how we have to be innovative in order to keep up with our competitors and keep the business going. And I think that based on this conversation and previously our conversation, you're someone that it just has a lot of creativity that you generate, which helps your business and gets people on board and wanting you to win in your business, as well as when you send out these cartoons out to people, it's a win for them because they see your creativity come to life and it's applicable to what they're going through in some aspect in their life. And so
Yeah,
Stu,
that makes sense. That makes sense. For a long time, I was, well, you read my background at the very beginning. It's such a crazy and it seems like a rather disjointed background. Like you're a cartoonist, but you also wrote a book about getting meetings, and then another one about business growth strategy. What? How does this even fit together? But I came to realize that I think entrepreneurship is probably one of those pinnacle expressions of creativity. I mean, entrepreneurs are constantly bringing new things to light or to life that didn't exist before. That's a lot of vision and a lot of insight. I don't want to call their business model or their product or service the gag, but it's kind of like the gag in cartooning. It's the thing that you deliver that everyone just says, "Well, that's astonishing. Look at this thing. This is incredible. Look at that. Read it. It's incredible." And that's I think that actually it all fits together really well. I think entrepreneurs are probably some of the most creative people on the planet. And but their creativity is probably channeled in a different way than, let's say, a cartoonist. It certainly does, than a cartoonist might, or a painter might. But it's every bit as creative and probably more deeply creative because you, again, going back to those unfair advantages, how do you cultivate new unfair advantages? And it's a, I think it's a pure exercise of creativity. And so, yeah, I have great respect for the creativity of entrepreneurs. And now I feel like, well, okay, I belong again. Because at first it was like, none of this stuff belongs together, but it does.
Right. Yeah. Stu, we are about that time, and I want to be respectful of your time. Where can people locate you should they choose to connect with you through this podcast? And also, my last question to you is, what does purpose mean to you?
Well, so, well, that's a question that
It's a
goes
part
this way.
question. Yeah. So
But,
if you can.
well, first of all, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I think that's probably the easiest thing to do. So just, if you know the spelling of my name, I think it's probably with the show notes, but,
Yes.
Stu Hynek, and just find me on LinkedIn, mention you heard me on the podcast, and I'm happy to connect with you. I have an author site as well. You might want to go check that out. StuHeinecke.com, StuHeinecke.com. So you can connect with me there and you can actually claim the first two chapters of How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed if you join my list. So you can do both of those things. Now, what does purpose mean? Man, that was interesting because, I was just talking to an old friend. And I grew up in New England, where and we, I became part of the town's fife and drum corps. So I played the fife, and it turns out there's this thriving community of people who love to play the fifes and drums. They do it together. They get together. They have these big musters. They have these jam sessions that go all night, and they camp out, and it's a lot of fun. It was a great thing. But I was talking to him about. He stayed in that community, and I left. I went into cartooning, and then I went into writing books, and now These things that we're doing with summits around the world, growth summits around the world. And I was saying to my friend that, you know, the thing that bothered me about is playing the fifes and drums, it's an exercise, it's an outlet, a creative outlet, but it has almost zero impact. And the things that I went on to do, cartooning, when my cartoons show up in the journal, they reach 2.1 million people. That's a lot more impact, you know, and it's something new. It's not that same old song that we've been playing for years. So, and then the books have had even more impact because I've helped people change their lives and their careers by being able to get meetings and suddenly making a lot of money or starting businesses because of it. And I'm sure the same thing will happen from the Weed Strategy book. So I think it's about having impact, is that leaving the world a better place than you found it. And also, I would say that there's just this great joy in collaborating radically. Just collaborate with as many people as you can, be as collaborative as you can. That doesn't mean a pushover. What I'm saying is get together with the smartest people you know and put together the most outrageous things that people have never seen before. And that's impact as well.
Right. Wow. That's powerful. Thank you so much for sharing your insight. We could talk for hours, and you know, I'm sure this will not be our last meeting together, connection together. But folks, if you enjoyed this episode, please connect with Stu. You know where to find him. And also please like this podcast talk, as well as subscribe to my channel, The Purpose Tune Podcast. Until then, folks, thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day.